Welcome to the Audit 15 Fun Podcast. My goal of this podcast is to bring relevant internal audit topics to the table at least every 15 days. Today, I have the honor to have as my guest, Lynn Trung. She is the author of The 7 Deadly Sins of Organizational Culture, and James Patterson, author of the book Beyond the 5 Whys. Welcome both to the podcast. It's an honor to have you on.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. So we're going to be talking about culture audit, working with culture. Before we get into the questions, I just want to give the opportunity to both of you to kind of give some of your background and experience with working in that space.
So I have actually, as the chief audit executive, and I've had that role at various companies for the past 15 years, four different companies. But at one of those companies, the CEO did approach me and asked me to do a culture assessment. You'll call it what you will, but he was concerned that the company that he founded, because it grew so quickly and going from less than 50 people to hundreds of people, and then going public as well during that time frame of growth, he was fearful that the culture would change in a way that was undesirable to his ideal culture in the company that he founded, right? So it was very personal to him. We accommodate that request and we did a culture assessment, which I can get into. But that's been my experience, as well as coming here in TTA. You know, every year we do an employee engagement survey. And at the same time, another group was doing a culture survey. So instead of over-surveying our employees, they decided to combine the two. And I was a part of that process. Had a seat at the table because I'm on the executive management team, in how we were able to combine the two, incorporate some culture questions into the engagement survey, and then how we go about addressing any of the gaps. So with that.
Awesome. We'll get back to that. I do have a question on that. But James, okay. I'll let you go as well. Give your background in this space here.
So hello, everybody. So I worked in finance for a number of years and then got a mad assignment to work in HR. I had just done a master's degree and I was looking at the cultural challenges of being efficient with at the same time being creative and innovative. When you're a pharmaceuticals company, you need to do both. I then was chief audit executive for 7 years for the pharmaceuticals company AstraZeneca, and I've been doing training and consulting for 14 years now in the internal audit space, coaching for heads of internal audit. And I wrote the practice guidance for the IAEA UK and Ireland on auditing culture going back as far as 2012, and I've been running training courses all over Europe on auditing culture. I think one thing I'd just say to kick this off is, having worked in HR, the issue of the three lines and how does any audit work fit in with what's already going on? And Lynn's already mentioned, you know, the whole question of employee surveys and this question of, so how is the culture visible from an employee survey, but also different from an employee survey, I think is really important. It's really best practice, what Lynn said, to imagine that a head of internal audit will have a voice at the design of the employee survey, because very often heads of audit are not involved. This is a lot about what questions you ask. And the one thing I'd say finally that I think is just worth saying is, this issue of the difference between culture, subculture, after all, the culture of an audit team is not the same as the culture of a sales team, and then individual behavior on an individual day is really relevant to this conversation about audit being more interested in culture, the culture and behavior space.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for having me. Lovely to be here.
Yeah, absolutely. I think this is going to be a great discussion. Great minds here to discuss the topic. So I'll have Lynn answer the first question that I have. which is okay. The following, based on the real case scenario. So you are the CAE, like you are in real life. You are having a meeting with the head of HR and proposing doing a culture audit, having a discussion to see if they, if the head of HR is aligned in on that idea. You have a question from the head of HR, and the question is, how is this going to be different than the survey that we send out annually and the action plans that come out of that survey? What's your answer to that question?
Okay. So my answer is, regarding the difference between the employee engagement survey and a culture audit or assessment, whatever you want to call it, is, for one, the types of questions that you ask in an employee engagement survey versus questions that you would design and formulate to try to, you know, take the temperature of how people feel about the actual culture they experience every day. Now, if you're a company that has already incorporated some of those culture questions in the employee engagement survey, then maybe you don't need to change anything, you know. So as far as surveying the employees, that may not need to change. But I think a cultural assessment is, goes beyond just surveying the employees. That's, to me, that's only one input. The other things I would look at would be the compensation structure, you know, how people are motivated and incentivized, the organization's risk appetite and how they manage risks. You know, is it no fences at all, no bright red lines, go do what all that you can to grow the company and bring in revenues. You're looking at policies and procedures, right? So what is the company's risk appetite, how they manage risk, and then how do they make those bright red lines visible in terms of policies and procedures and controls, right? So it's looking at that. It's also looking at the talent that we bring in. So talent management types of measures, you know, how high is the turnover? Is that in line when you benchmark it amongst your peers? And if it's much higher, why is it higher? You know what I mean? Is there something going on with the corporate culture that's driving people out? Do we have core values? How are those core values communicated, or are they a best kept secret and they're just all put on the website to show our investors and our board members that we have them check the box, right? How do we assess people as candidates coming into the organization before they become employees on whether their individual core values are aligned with ours? And then once they come into the organization, how do we continue to assess the way people behave to way that the company expects people to behave. So beyond your technical competency, beyond your ability to, you know, bring in sales or do your whatever it is that you're being asked to do on a day-to-day basis. So it's a much more than just serving employees. Are you asking the right questions beyond just, is your pay acceptable? You know, are you happy with your pay? Do you have work-life balance? Those are typical employee engagement survey questions, but then I think you go beyond adding in cultural questions and then also looking at the other measurement points.
So James, as a previous head of HR, and if you're in that discussion, maybe some thoughts here. And in your intro, you mentioned something about the importance of the design of the question. So some additional thoughts there as well.
Well, and Lynn just said this, you know, so, for example, a classic thing with an employee survey would be things like, do you think decision making in the company is too fast or too slow? Do you think that your manager provides a good example to employees in terms of showing ethical values? And if we take both of those questions, number one is, you may have examples where you think decision making is too fast and sometimes where it's too slow. So where's the drill down into, can you give an example where you think decision making was too slow and why? And if you feel that manager behaviors were not good, what would that example be? And then, of course, you get into confidentiality reasons, but the danger is it's too general.
Yep.
What I would say is, if you have well-constructed questions, so if you think about all the thing that Lynn has talked about, the compensation scheme, the way the policies and procedures are written, the way talent management and induction works, et cetera. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I would say is, you are stating the obvious to say to any chief exec or head of HR, do you know what? There are issues with your culture. And there are issues that audit has found that weren't in the HR survey. Because frankly, the flat reaction to that is, yeah, of course, there are issues with any culture.
Mm-hmm.
Do they really matter? Okay. One thing I'd like to inject into this on the good things that Lynn has said is, where might this behavioral problem matter? So we've heard about, for example, we've touched upon the way people show their values, and Lynn's made the connection with reward. So what you might start to do is, are there any situations where we'll be in a lot of trouble from irregular sales practices? And rather than doing generally, how are the reward systems working, zoom in on specific pockets of people, specific targets, and so on. Likewise, if we've got issues with roles and responsibilities, it goes without saying that any organization is going to have some unclear roles and responsibilities in some places.
Sure.
And the truth is, in some places, that doesn't matter. And in other places, that really matters. And so one of the things I'd say is, when you're doing this, when you're looking at culture, the trick is to go to classic internal audit risk-based and start saying, where is it that this behavioral cultural problem might be generating a real business consequence? And what's interesting, looking at Lynn's book, The Seven Deadly Sins of Culture, you'll be able to correct me in a second, Lynn, is Lynn's got things like lack of accountability as a sin. And this actually is very similar to what's in my book, The Beyond the Five Whys, where I've got the issue of unclear roles and responsibilities, accountabilities and authorities. And this is an example where in the wrong places, unclear accountabilities is disastrous. And that's the trick, is to start joining up the behavioral stuff with this has a business consequence.
So I'd like to respond. So where I've seen it done so well in terms of assessing culture and then doing something about it, and to address your previous issue, James, about, you know, having a set of core values up here, how does that apply to each department and how do you drill down to the individual? So I'm going to address all that with this ideal answer. So I'm currently at an organization where I think it's done very well, where they make sure that the employee engagement survey questions add in specific cultural questions. You know, we have a set of core values, so we actually incorporate some of those core values into the questions. You know, are you experiencing these core values? Are you seeing it in our leaders, walk the talk, et cetera? Where are you seeing it all? There's also an area where people can free form write in, you know, if you are giving a score that's low, then it opens up a text box where you write in your specific concern, and it's all anonymous. And so we had over 900 comments, more comments than there were a number of employees. And obviously we had to do some trend analysis, right? We saw where the scores were the lowest across the board. We got together as a leadership team and picked risk-based, right? Prioritized the top four gaps that we felt could be the most impactful to, you know, negatively impacting our business, our outcomes, et cetera. So however we picked it, we picked the top four. We had working groups to drill down on the details, read the comments related to those particular gaps that scored low, and then had specific action items with owners and due dates. And it's being monitored to so that we can follow up and make sure those things are being done. We're going to remeasure every year to see if, you know, we're making progress, or is it still the same? You know, the problems are still the same. The cultures, our core values, are actually built into our individual performance evaluation. Every person's performance evaluation has a tab that lists out our core values, and their manager or supervisor assesses them not only on meeting performance metrics, but also, you know, in getting there, in performing every day. How are you behaving? How are you interacting and communicating with people? Are you being a bully? You know, are you driving people away, et cetera? So that's how we're doing it. This is the best case that I've seen compared to any other company I've worked at.
Just in reaction to Lynn, one of the things sure. that I would say, so what Lynn's described is an organization that's got lots of free text to hear inconvenient truths mm-hmm. and is making best endeavors to prioritize and to seriously then work on issues and track progress. All I would say to that, which sounds great, is the deadly word politics and the deadly word group dynamics, which is basically what happens when people are in a room together. And one of the things that we must remember when we're talking about culture is there are certain things that are politically exciting to support. So, for example, we need more of a can-do attitude here, right? We need more of, and the senior leaders go, yeah, yeah, yeah. And if we don't see that, we need to point out to people and so on, right? Whereas actually, if you're in the audit team, you might want to say, I don't want you to can do. I want you to slow down and think about what you're about to do. So one of the tricky things about culture is the ways in which in a room, in a meeting, people can end up being effectively groupthinked or brainwashed into not raising a concern. Because the values that have been stated are, oh, you need to be can do, you need to get on, you need to be proactive, you need to be positive. And that's conflicting with you need to speak up. And so this is great, but let's not forget that in certain circumstances, the best intentioned culture program can be contaminated by political agendas.
I agree. And so these conversations can't just be happening at one point in time. I think the CEO does a really great job of doing other things, getting feedback from employees, skipping a layer, right? Doing skip level lunches, coffees, whatever, meeting with each department separately from the group setting, getting out to a offsite retreat in a different environment, hiring a third party facilitator, you know, who's good at seeing where people are being quiet, certain people quiet, and coming and getting them to talk, people who don't typically talk. And so I agree with you. There are ways, if you are willing to put in the investment and time and effort to get feedback in different ways, in different forms, and try to break through the group thing. I agree with you.
All right. So my last question for you guys here, and this is also based on the real case scenario. So I had a discussion with an audit leader who shared that they perform a culture audit. They focus on leaders only. And the result was there was one person that maybe needed to leave, right? So that was part of the result of the culture audit. So to me, the question to him, which I would like to get your thoughts on this, what are some tangible benefits that audit departments can have and companies can have by performing a culture assessment?
Let me just make a quick comment if I can. So
sure.
We have done a culture audit, and the result of the culture audit is that we've got a bad apple and the bad apple is gone. And in theory, the culture is improved as a result. And as you know, and as Lynn has got in her book as well, I'm a huge believer in root cause analysis. And in root cause analysis, there are a series of whys. And so if you've got a bad leader that's been around for a while and you get rid of them, well, that's all very well and good. But the question is, well, why did we think they were good for so long? And what's going on in our system, in our culture that allowed us to think they were good for so long isn't really resolved by the fact that we've just got rid of them. And in fact, as what's called just culture shows, sometimes getting rid of people as an attempt to solve a problem actually drives cultural things worse, because what people see is, oh, that person was open and honest, or they did this, they were a bit blunt, and now they've been exited. So, you know, you've got a culture which is about scapegoats. We find a scapegoat, we get rid of them. And what does that do? It means you have a culture that doesn't learn. So the one thing I want to say is, I think your example of getting rid of a person is really interesting. And sometimes it's good to hold people to account and to discipline them. But what I would like just to do as one thing and then over to Lynn is make the connection between, and this survey that was done in the UK by the Institute of Internal Auditors here and in Ireland around what are the main ways you try to understand culture, to which 55% of CAEs in the UK use root cause analysis as a tool to understand culture. And that includes things like, we've got a problem with roles and responsibilities. We've got a cultural problem of saying we need more resources. We've got a cultural problem of prioritizing because we're told to do everything. So I think your example is really good. And I think sometimes the exit can be good, but I think too often people associate exits and punishment with a good culture when actually it's about scapegoating and potentially a fear culture if you're not careful.
So to answer John's question, what are some tangible benefits, et cetera? So the two most common tangible benefits that I see with doing a culture audit or assessment and really taking the time to understand the whys and remediate, et cetera, is when you're comparing the culture results to other measures such as turnover, right? If turnover is super high and you're hurting, you're bleeding people, you're having to spend a lot of money to recruit more people, if things aren't getting done because of the high turnover, and the culture survey is resulting in poor grades, then you're going to be motivated to do something, right? Because if people are staying and people are performing and the culture survey is low, it's almost like, who cares? You know, it's like everything's working. We're not going to care as much about people are just complaining, because they're spoiled or whatever. So I think it's dangerous to just look at one measure, just to look at the culture survey results. You got to corroborate it with other things to see, if it's impactful, to James' point. The other place where I see where doing a culture survey becomes tangibly beneficial is when I see leaders, CEOs especially, or boards getting surprised, right? Something happens, some bad event happens. It's like, we didn't see that coming. Why didn't we see that coming? You do a root cause analysis. James, maybe that book will be helpful. And you find out it's because people were afraid to speak up in a timely manner. People were afraid to push up bad news, right? Shoot the messenger culture, right? I've seen people get shot for telling bad news. I'm not going to tell bad news, So you find out that because of this culture of not having a safe space for people to speak up and deliver bad news, that bad news isn't coming up in time. And that's why you have bad surprises. And so that's when you start to wanting to fix the culture. So those are at least two examples where it becomes very tangible to improve your culture.
Perfect. Thank you. Thank you both for participating in the podcast. I know we could probably talk about this topic for a few more minutes, but I really do appreciate you both being on. Thank you so much.